Sam looked at me, then returned his attention to Adam's back. I could see that back tighten up, as if Adam could feel Sam's gaze. Maybe he could. "Why don't you go see what Z is up to?" I asked. "You're not helping here." Sam whined, took a half step toward Adam. "Sam, please." I couldn't stand it if they ended up fighting. Someone would die. The big white werewolf turned reluctantly and walked stiffly, with frequent pauses to see if Adam had moved at all. Finally, he hopped over the wreckage of the door and was gone. "Adam?" I asked. But he didn't answer. If he'd been human, I'd have bugged him, just to get it over with. I'd hurt him, and I waited to take my punishment. I'd been taught you make your choices and live with the consequences long before I'd first read Immanuel Kant in college. But he wasn't human. And just then, if I was any judge, he was fighting his wolf. Being alpha, being dominant, didn't make that fight any easier. Maybe the opposite. Being stubborn helped, and Adam was well qualified on that front. Getting Sam to leave helped more. The only other thing I could do to help was to sit quietly and wait while Adam stared at the wreckage he'd made of my office. For Adam, screwed up bonding thing or not, I'd wait forever.
"Really?"
he asked in a tone I'd never heard from him before. Softer. Vulnerable. Adam didn't do vulnerable. "Really what?" I asked.
"Despite the way our bond scares you, despite the way someone in the pack played you, you'd still have me."
He'd been listening to my thoughts. This time, it didn't bother me. "Adam," I told him, "I'd walk barefoot over hot coals for you."
"You didn't take advantage of this thing with Samuel as a way of putting distance between us," he said.
I sucked in a breath. I could see how he might have interpreted it that way. "You know that section of the Bible where Jesus tells Peter he'll deny him 3 times before morning? Peter says, 'Heck no.' But sure enough, when he's asked by some people if he's one of Jesus's followers, he says he's not. And after the 3rd time, he hears the cock crow and realizes what he's done. I feel like Peter right now." Adam started laughing. He turned around and I saw bright gold eyes looking through me the way wolves' eyes always seem to do. More than that, he'd actually begun to change a little. His jaw was longer, the angle of his cheekbones slightly different.
"You're comparing me to Jesus? Like this?"
He used his fingers to motion toward his face.
"Don't you think you're being a little sacrilegious?"
His voice was bitter. "No more than I'm St. Peter," I told him. But I had Peter's "what have I done" moment. Only his was instantaneous, and mine took a lot longer. It started when I heard Maya scream while I was working in the garage, and continued pretty much up until you talked to Bran and bought Samuel a little more time. Funny how making decisions that seem right at the time... I shook my head. Peter probably thought that telling the guy he wasn't one of Jesus's followers was the smartest thing to do. Kept him alive, for one. I thought keeping Samuel alive, as he wasn't raving or killing anyone, yet, was a good idea. I thought that telling you I needed a little space was good. Give me some time to wrap my head around having other people rattling around in my mind without hurting you because it scared me silly.
"What?"
asked Adam incredulously. I bowed my head and said, "Because it scares me, silly." He shook his head.
"Not that part. The keeping it from hurting me part."
"You don't like being a werewolf," I told him. "Oh, you deal with it. But you hate it. You think that it makes you a freak. I didn't want you to know I had problems with some of the werewolf stuff, too." I swallowed. "Okay, more problems than just that whole 'I must control your life because you belong to me' that most of the werewolves I know have." He stared at me with his yellow eyes and elongated face. His mouth was open slightly, because his upper and lower jaw no longer quite matched up. I could see the edges of teeth that were sharper and more uneven than they usually were.
"I am a freak, Mercy," he said,
and I snorted. "Yeah, such a freak," I agreed. "That's why I've been drooling over you for years, even though I'd sworn off werewolves for life after Samuel. I knew that if I told you being a member of the pack and the bonds and all that were bothering me, it would hurt you. And you are already putting up with... I couldn't wrap my mouth around the ugly word rape, so I softened it, as I often did. With the aftermath of Tim, I thought if I gave myself a little time, figured out how to keep the pack from turning me into your ex-wife, and bought Samuel a little extra time as well... Adam leaned against the wall just inside the door, the wall my counter used to block, and folded his arms across his chest. "What I'm trying to say," I told him, "is that I'm sorry. It seemed like a good idea at the time, and no, I did not engineer this to put some distance between us."
"You were trying to keep me from being hurt," he said, still in that odd voice.
"Yes." He shook his head slowly, and I noticed that sometime while we'd been talking, he lost the wolfish aspect, and his face had returned to normal. Warm brown eyes caught the light from the windows as one side of his mouth quirked up.
"Do you have any idea how much I love you?"
he asked. "Enough to accept my apologies?" I suggested in a small voice.
"Heck no,"
he said, and pushed off from the wall, stalking forward. When he reached me, he put his hands up and touched the sides of my neck with the tips of his fingers, as if I were something fragile.
"No apologies from you,"
he told me, his voice soft enough to melt my knees and most of my other parts.
"First of all, as I already pointed out, you would make the same choices again, right? So an apology doesn't work. Secondly, you, being who you are, could have made no other choice. Since I love you as you are, where you are, it hardly makes sense for me to kick about it when you act like yourself, right?"
"People don't always see it that way," I said, stepping into him until our hip bones bumped. He laughed, a quiet sound that made me happy down to my toes.
"Yeah, well, I don't promise I'll always be logical about it."
He gave a rueful glance to my broken counter and the cash register on its side.
"Especially at first."
His smile dropped away.
"I thought you were trying to leave me."
"I might be dumb," I told him, putting my nose against his silk tie. "But I'm not that dumb. I've got you now, and you aren't getting away." His arms tightened almost painfully around me. "So why didn't you tell Bran about Samuel?" I asked him. "I was sure you'd have to tell him. Aren't you bound by blood-sworn oaths?"
"If you'd called me last night and told me what was going on, I'd have called Bran and shot Samuel myself. But, based on what happened this morning, he seems to be holding it together okay. He deserves some time."
His arms, which had loosened a little, pulled me against him even harder.
"If something like that happens to me, you call Bran and you stay as far from me as you can get. My wolf is not like Samuel's."
He gave the counter another look.
"If I lose it, you just stay away until I'm dead."
Chapter 6 Once most everyone else was gone, Adam tossed the Faye's rifle into the back seat of his truck.
"I'll see if I can't find out something from the serial numbers," he said. "The way she just left it probably means that she doesn't think we can trace it to her anyway, but it would be stupid not to check."
"You will be careful," I told him.
"Sweetheart,"
he bent down and kissed me.
"I'm always careful." "What'll you give me if I watch out for him?"
It wasn't what Ben said. It was the way he'd said it. I have no idea how he made those words sound suggestive, but he managed it. Adam shot him a look. Ben grinned unrepentantly and ducked around the side of the truck and hopped in.
"I was on the way to a job site when I got the call that something was up,"
Adam told me.
"I've got to get back."
"No worries," I said. "I'll lock up. I don't think I'll be doing anything more here today." He opened his door and stopped with his head turned away from me.
"I'm sorry about your counter."
I took a couple of steps forward until my nose pressed against his back and wrapped my arms around him. "I'm sorry about a lot of things, but I'm glad I have you." He hugged my arms.
"Me too."
"Get a room," said Ben from inside the truck.
"Stuff it."
Adam turned around, kissed me, and hopped in the truck. Sam and I watched him drive away. I stopped at a sandwich shop and bought 10 subs with double meat and cheese. Then I drove the rabbit to the park on the Kennewick side of the river to eat. There wasn't any snow yet, but it was a cold and dreary day. So, other than some distant joggers and a serious-looking biker, we had the place to ourselves. I ate half a sandwich and drank a bottle of water. Sam ate the rest. "Well, Sam," I asked when we were both finished, "what do you want to do today?" He looked at me with interest, which didn't help much. "We could go run," I told him as I threw our garbage into a can next to where I'd parked the rabbit. He shook his head with emphasis. "Hunting not a good idea?" I asked. "I think it would help you to relax." He lifted his lips to display his fangs, then snapped his teeth 5 times, each snap faster, more savage than the one previous to it. When he stopped, he was perfectly calm, except that I could see that he was breathing harder, and there was a deep hunger in his eyes, even though he'd just eaten 9.5 feet of loaded submarine sandwiches. "Okay," I said after a pause to make sure my voice wasn't shaking. "Hunting is a bad idea. I get it. Something peaceful." I opened the passenger seat to let him in and saw the towel-wrapped bundle on the back seat. "Want to help me return a book?" I asked. The uptown was bustling with Saturday shoppers, and I had to park a good distance away from the bookstore. I opened the door for Sam. He hopped out, then froze. After a second, he dropped his nose to the ground. But whatever he was looking for, he didn't find, because he stopped and drew in a deep breath of air. My nose is better than a normal human's, if not as good as it is in my coyote shape. I took in a deep breath, too. But there were too many people, too many cars, for me to figure out what had set Sam off. He shook himself, gave me a look I couldn't fathom, and hopped back into the rabbit. He flattened himself on the seat, stretching across the gap between, and lowered his muzzle to the driver's side seat. "You're staying here, I take it," I asked. "It must not be anything dangerous, or he wouldn't let me go on my own." Sam, with his wolf ascendant, had always been even more protective of me than Samuel himself had. Maybe one of the other werewolves was nearby. It would make sense for Sam to avoid them. I took another deep breath. I still didn't scent anyone I recognized, but Samuel's nose was better than mine outside of coyote shape. I moved his tail out of danger and shut his car door. I opened the back door to get the book and reconsidered. Finn's neighbor might have been fey and faintly creepy, but that didn't mean there was anything wrong. But there could be, and with Sam in the car, the book was just as safe here. If Finn was at the bookstore, I'd just come back and get it. If his neighbor or someone other than Finn was around instead, I'd regroup. "I'm going to leave the book in the back seat," I told Sam. "I should be right back." In the short time since we'd left the park, the temperature had dropped and the wind had picked up. My light jacket wasn't quite up to the wind and the damp. I gave the gray skies a good look. If it rained tonight and the temperature dropped much from here, we might have a good, hard, freezing rain. Montana may have steep, windy roads that are nasty when covered with snow and ice, but those are nothing compared to the Tri-Cities when the freezing rain turns the pavement into a polished ice skating rink. I trotted through the parking lot and narrowly avoided getting run over by a Subaru that was backing out without looking. I kept an eye out for other idiots, and so it wasn't until I stepped onto the sidewalk and looked up into the window of the bookstore that I saw a gray-haired woman behind the counter. I felt a frizzle of relief. She wasn't the creepy neighbor. I reached for the door and saw that the close sign was still up, with an addition. Someone had taped a piece of white paper with "Until further notice," printed in thick black Sharpie. While I hesitated, the woman inside gave me a cheery smile and walked up to the door, turning the deadbolt so she could open it. Her movements were surprisingly brisk and sprightly for a woman of her grandmotherly roundness and wrinkles. "Hello, dear," she said. "I'm afraid we're closed today. Did you need something?" She was fey. I could smell it on her. Earth and forest and magic, with a touch of something burning, air and salt water. I'd never smelled the like, and I've met two of the Grey Lords who rule the Fae. Most Fae smell to me like one of the elements the old alchemists claimed made up the universe, earth, air, fire, and water. Never more than one. Not until this woman. Her faded hazel eyes smiled into mine. "Is Finn around?" I said. "Who are you? I haven't seen you here before." I wasn't a regular customer. Maybe she worked with Finn all the time. But I was betting she didn't. If she'd helped often, I'd have smelled her in the store the first time I'd come here. I would have remembered if I'd caught her scent. Lots of things scare me, like vampires, for instance. Since I've become more intimately acquainted with them, they scare me even more than they used to. I know that they can kill me. But I've killed one, and helped to kill two others. The Fae. In the most terrifying horror films, you never see what is killing people. I know that's because the unknown is far scarier than anything some makeup or special effects person can come up with. The Fae are like that. Their true face is concealed behind other forms and designed to blend in with the human race and hide what they truly are. This sweet-faced person who looked like someone's grandmother might be one of those who ate children who were lost in the woods or drowned young men who trespassed in her forest. Of course, it was possible that she might be one of the lesser or gentler Fae, just as she looked. But I didn't think so. I'm smarter than Snow White. I wouldn't be eating any apples she gave me. She ignored my questions. Fae don't give out their true names, and said, "Are you a friend of his? You're shivering. I don't suppose it would hurt anything if you came in and sat down a bit to warm up. I'm just helping straighten out the books while Finn is gone." Gone? I wasn't going into that shop alone with her. Instead, I pounded her with the kind of questions any customer, okay, any obsessive customer would ask. "Where is he? Do you know how I can get in touch with him? Why isn't the store open?" She smiled. "I don't know where he is at the moment." Another evasion. She might know that he was in the basement, for instance, but not exactly where he was standing. "He'll probably let me know when he gets a chance to call me. Who should I tell him came asking after him?" I looked into her guileless eyes, and I knew that Tad had been right to be worried. All I had was Finn's unresponsive phone, a nasty neighbor, and the store closed, but my instincts were clamoring. Something had happened to Finn. Something bad. I didn't know him well, but I liked him. And going by the phone call Tad had received, whatever had happened to him was tied to the book he'd loaned to me, which made it my fault. Maybe if I hadn't kept it to read this past month, he'd still be safe in his store. I smiled back at her, a polite smile. "Don't worry about it. I'll stop in another time." She snapped her fingers. "Wait just a minute. My grandson told me that he'd loaned a nice young woman a rather valuable book that she should be returning soon." I raised my eyebrows. "Right now, I'm interested in a first British edition of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone." Not really a lie. It would be interesting. And I didn't tell her I was trying to buy one. I don't know if the Fae can figure out if someone is lying as well as the werewolves can. Any group that has a prohibition against lying that is as stringent as the Fae's probably has a method to detect when it happens. "He didn't tell me about anything like that," she said suspiciously, as if he would have normally. But she had lost the chance to convince me that she was Finn's assistant when she allowed my comment that she was a stranger to his store to stand. "I suspect it'll take him a while," I told her. "I just stopped by to check in with him. I'll come back another time." I stopped the thanks that was on the tip of my tongue and substituted, "Bye now," and a casual wave. I felt her eyes on my back until I was hidden behind rows of cars, and I was glad I'd parked the car a long way from the mall. Sam moved his head off my seat without raising any part of his body enough that he might be seen through the windows. He was hiding. I looked at him and glanced at the bookstore as I cruised past it on the way out of the parking lot. The woman was back behind the counter, going over something that looked like an account book. Coincidences happen a lot less often in real life than they do in the movies. "Sam," I said, "are you staying out of sight of a Fae, one that smells like all the elements at once?" He raised his chin and dropped it. "Is she one of the good guys?" I asked. He made a gesture that was neither yes nor no. "Trouble?" He snorted affirmative. "Damn it!" I pulled over at a gas station, parked the car, and called Warren, Adam's third in the pack, and my friend. "Hey, Warren," I said when he answered. "Does Kyle have a safe in that monstrosity he lives in?" I could put the book in Adam's safe, and if it weren't Faye who were looking for it, I'd feel relatively confident with it hidden and surrounded by werewolves. But Warren's human boyfriend's house would be a much less likely spot to leave it, and nearly as safe.
"Several."
Warren's voice was dry.
"I'm sure he'd be delighted to loan you one. You storing blackmail material now, Mercy?"
There were noises in the background of his phone. People, and the kind of echoing you get in a really big building. "Wouldn't that be something?" I said. "How much do you suppose Adam would pay to keep an X-rated video of him off the internet?" Warren laughed. "Yeah," I said sadly. "That's what I think, too. So, no riches in my future, and no blackmail either. Can you or Kyle meet Sam and me at Kyle's house sometime soon?"
"I'm on guard duty right now, but I bet Kyle is home. He doesn't always answer the house phone. Do you have his cell number?"
Warren worked for his boyfriend. I know, it's an awkward thing, but Warren hadn't exactly been making rent at the Stop and Rob he'd worked at before. Kyle had shaken a few trees, bribed a few officials, probably, and maybe blackmailed more, and gotten Warren a private detective's license. Warren guarded clients and did quiet investigations for Kyle's law firm. "I have it," I told him. "Are you at Walmart?"
"Nope. Grocery store. Walmart was an hour ago."
"Poor baby," I said sympathetically.
"Nope," he said, his voice soft. "I'm doing something useful. This lady deserves to feel safe, though lots of folks seem to think I'm responsible for her black eye."
"You're tough," I said unsympathetically. "You can handle a few nasty looks." Being a gay werewolf for 100 years gave Warren a skin so thick it might as well be armor. Not much ruffled his feathers, except for Kyle.
"I'm kind of hoping her soon-to-be ex shows up," he said softly. I thought so she wouldn't hear him. "I'd like to get the opportunity to introduce myself to him."
Kyle Brooks's house is in the West Richland Hills, where the rich folks live. Huge and yet somehow delicately designed, it settles in among its neighbors like a sly cat among poodles. The size is right, but it's more graceful and comfortable in the desert light than the rest of them. Divorce lawyering, at least in Kyle's case, pays very well. I parked the rabbit on the street, let Sam out, and got the book, and the walking stick that was lying beside it. "Hello," I told it. It didn't do anything magical or warm in my hands, but somehow it felt smug. I bumped the rabbit's door closed with a hip and trotted all the way up to Kyle's front door. The significance of the book had just entered a whole new dimension once the old woman at the bookstore had mentioned it. So I held it with both hands and tucked the walking stick under my arm. When I got to the front door, I couldn't ring the bell. Sam saw my dilemma and caught the doorbell with a gentle nudge of one claw. Kyle must have been right by the door, as he'd promised when we talked, because when he opened the door, he was face to fang with Sam. He didn't even flinch. Instead, he cocked a hip, made a kissy face, then smiled seductively, turning an ordinary pair of jeans and a purple wife beater into brothel wear.
"Hey, darling," he told Sam. "I bet you're gorgeous in man shape, hmm?"
"It's Sam," I told Kyle dryly. And even though I knew it would just stir up trouble, I had to warn him again because I really liked him. "You need to be careful about whom you flirt with among the wolves. You might get more than you bargained for." Kyle could sometimes have a real chip on his shoulder. Getting disinherited, then living in a conservative community has had that effect on more than one gay man. And Kyle could take flaming and bitchy to an art form when he thought it would make someone who disapproved of him uncomfortable. Luckily, he chose to take my warning in the spirit it was offered. In an entirely different kind of voice, he said,
"Love you too, Mercy."
He dropped the flirtatious act with a speed and completeness that many an Oscar winner would envy.
"Hey, Samuel, sorry, didn't recognize you with all the fur."
He looked at what I held.
"You want to put a towel in my safe?"
"It's a very special towel," I told him as I ducked around him and into the house. "Dried Elvis's hair on the day of the last concert."
"Ooh,"
he said, stepping back so Sam could follow me. He shut the door and, almost as an afterthought, turned the deadbolt.
In that case, you certainly need it someplace secure. You want the big safe with all the electronics, or something better hidden?
Better hidden would be cool. I didn't think that electronics were going to work against the Fae.
He led the way through the house, up the stairs, and past his library, one side filled with beautiful leather-clad law books, the other with tattered paperbacks that included Nora Roberts's complete works. I took two steps and stopped, backed up, and looked in the library again. If the Fae were after the book and they had some way of tracking it, certainly they would already have it. Instead, it had spent the better part of 2 days in my rabbit wrapped in a towel. Kyle came back and looked at the library, too.
It's a book, is it? You're thinking of hiding it in plain sight?
He shook his head.
We can do that, but if someone is looking for a book, the first place they'll look after the big safe is the library.
I have a better idea. So I followed him to a bedroom. It was painted dark blue with black splatters, and the twin-sized bunk beds had comforters with Thomas the Tank Engine chugging around on his track. Not exactly something I expected to ever see in Kyle's house. I knew that he never had family visit, so it couldn't be for a nephew. Kyle continued into the bathroom, so I did too. Sam's claws clicked on the slate floor. Thomas continued to rule the bathroom, too. A plastic toothbrush holder in the shape of a train sat next to the sink, and a set of towels embroidered with Thomas and his friends hung from towel racks shaped like train tracks. Kyle opened a cupboard next to the sink to reveal two empty shelves and one filled with towels of various colors.
Give me that,
he said, so I handed him the book. He knelt on the floor and unfolded the towel, repositioned the book, and folded the towel in the same way as all the other towels. He handed it back to me, and I put it on the bottom of one of the stacks. Kyle looked at my work and straightened the stack. The book towel looked just like the ones around it. One thing pretending to be another. For some reason, I thought about the incident with the bounty hunter this morning. The bounty hunter, and the Fae armed with a plastic gun loaded with silver bullets just like Kelly Hart's gun had been, because he'd been hunting werewolves. Maybe that was not what the Fae had been hunting. Adam had suggested the silver ammunition might have been used only to match Kelly Hart's, that the shooter might have been after any of us, and not just a werewolf. I thought he was just trying to draw the spotlight off himself and keep me from worrying about him. But what if he was right? What if the Fae had been after me? I was probably being paranoid. The world didn't revolve around me, after all. Just because this past year I'd had vampires, Fae, and werewolves try to kill me at various times didn't mean someone was after me at present. The old woman in the bookstore hadn't known who I was. Surely, if the Fae were trying to kill me, she'd have recognized my face. Maybe the Fae were willing to kill for the book I'd just hidden in my friend's home. Warren wasn't always here, and Kyle was just human. Maybe I shouldn't leave it here. Maybe I was paranoid in seeing conspiracies where there were none. Hey, Kyle, I said. He looked at me. You don't risk anything for that book, I told him. If someone comes and threatens you, just give it to them. He raised a well-groomed eyebrow.
Why don't you give it to them, whoever them is?
I sorted through a number of answers, but finally said, That's just it. I don't really know who them is or why they want that book, or really if they want the book. Probably I was overreacting to the whole thing, and Finn would call me in a couple of days and ask for his book back. Probably the bounty hunter incident was just what everyone thought it was, a publicity-hungry producer. And the armed Fae was... My imagination failed me, but there could be an explanation that had nothing to do with me or the book. I couldn't really see someone just killing me outright like that for the book. Wouldn't they at least approach me first, ask me for it, tell me that if I didn't give it to them they'd kill Finn? Unless they'd already killed Finn.
You okay, Mercy?
Kyle asked. Fine. I'm fine. We were on our way down the stairs before I finally gave in to curiosity. Okay, who's the Thomas the Tank Engine fan, you or Warren? Kyle threw back his head and laughed.
Maybe we should have hidden it in the bathroom of the princess room. Then you could have asked which one of us likes to sleep with a pink canopy over his head.
The grin died down.
I have guessed, Mercy. Mostly divorces are messy and hurtful for everyone involved. All that hurt can explode on the wrong people. Sometimes people need a place to be safe for a while. And if there's a pool and a hot tub in the backyard, so much the better.
Kyle hid people in his home. Children who needed to be safe.
Sam growled. I reached down and rested my hand on his head. But Kyle didn't seem to recognize that Sam's reaction was a little extreme, even from a wolf who loved children. No one was being hurt here and now. Yes, Kyle started down the stairs. I agree, Samuel. Those are the men I really love sticking it to in court.
He paused.
And women, too, sometimes. Abuse and violence goes both ways. Did I ever tell you about the client I had who took a contract out on her husband?
You mean a killing-for-hire type contract?
He nodded. It was a first for me, too. Who'd have thought it would happen in our little town? Killer took him out with a single shot. They'd been married for 32 years, and he took up with their grandson's girlfriend. Apparently, she decided divorce and the lovely settlement I'd gotten her weren't enough. She turned herself in that afternoon. Seemed pretty happy to do so.
He paused at the kitchen.
Would you like something to eat?
I think I'd better go, I told him. I'd rather no one realized I stopped by here.
Weren't you carrying that walking stick of yours? Did you leave it in the bathroom?
It was gone. I'd been carrying it, and I hadn't noticed when it left. Don't worry about it, I told him. It'll show up again when it wants to. He gave me a delighted smile.
That's right, that's what Warren said. The thing just follows you around like a puppy?
I shrugged.
Pretty cool.
At the door, he hugged me and kissed my cheek. Sam gravely raised one paw like a well-trained dog, and Kyle shook the lion-sized foot without flinching.
You take care of Mercy, he told Sam. I don't know what she's gotten herself into this time, but Danger seems to be her new middle name.
Hey, I objected. Kyle looked down his nose at me.
Broken arm, concussion, sprained ankle, stitches, kidnapped.
He let his voice trail off.
And that's not the end of the list, is it? You keep Samuel or someone next to you until this blows over. I don't want to be attending your funeral, darling.
Fine, I said, hoping that he wasn't right. I'll be careful.
You just let Warren or me know if we can give you any more help.
I drove to the big mall in Kennewick because I felt a strong desire not to park somewhere isolated, and I wanted to call Tad. I had to park in Outer Mongolia because on a Saturday, that was the only place with parking spaces. But I was as far from alone as it was possible to be. Then I called Tad.
Hey, Mercy, he answered. Dad told me that you were nearly involved in a shootout at the OK Corral in East Kennewick this morning.
That's right, I told him. But let me tell you about the whole day and see what you think. I ran through the whole thing from beginning to end, leaving out only the part where I hid the book. When I'd finished, there was a small pause while Tad absorbed what I'd said. Then he asked,
"Just what is in that book, anyway?"
It's a book written about the Fae by someone who was Fae, I told him. I don't think there's anything magical about it, or if there is, I can't tell, and I usually can. There's a lot of information in it, and a lot of fairy tales retold from the other side. I had to laugh. It gave me a whole new perspective on Rumpelstiltskin, and a real aversion to ever reading Hansel and Gretel again.
Nothing shocking?
Not that I read. Not a whole lot that isn't already out in the realm of folklore, though this is more organized, particularly in regard to the variety of the Fae and the Fae artifacts. I suppose there could be something shocking in the part I haven't gotten through yet. Or there's something concealed by magic or a secret code? Invisible ink, maybe? My imagination failed me.
Let me tell Dad all of this, Tad said. I can't think that there would be that much interest in that old book. Sure, it's valuable, and there would be a desire, I think, to keep it out of the hands of the humans. But it wouldn't be disastrous if there's nothing in it but fairy tales, not that much different from books already available. Wait a minute.
He paused.
Maybe that old woman in the shop was Finn's grandmother.
His grandmother? She was older, but not that old. Finn is... It had been difficult to pin his age, I remembered. But he had been an adult, at least in his 30s, possibly as old as a well-preserved 50.
Anyway, this woman was maybe early 60s, no older than that.
Tad cleared his throat.
If she's Fae, Mercy, it doesn't matter how old she looks.
Finn doesn't have much Fae in his background, I said. I was certain of that.
This woman was big-time old-school Grey Lord kind of Fae.
Tad laughed.
The woman he calls his grandmother is probably more like his great-great-great, add a lot more greats to the end of it. He told me that one time when he was a kid, she drove off a bunch of Fae who were unhappy that he was so human. Or maybe that he, a human, had a touch of Fae blood at all. After that, she'd drop in now and then until she started to keep up with him just by cell phone.
So, she's a good guy? You think I should talk to her? Tell her about the book and ask her where Finn is?
I don't know if this piece has any good guys or villains, Mercy, he said. And I certainly don't know if the Fae you saw was Finn's grandmother or a Grey Lord. And if it was, there's no surety that she's safe to deal with.
Fae are not human, Mercy.
Some of them could eat their own children without anger or regret. Power motivates them more than love, if they can love. Some of them are so alone. You have no idea. I'll call Dad, then get back to you.
He hung up.
Well, I asked Sam, excitement enough for one day? Do you want to go home?
He looked up at me, and I saw that he was tired, too. More tired than a day mostly running around in a car could account for.
Sad, I thought suddenly.
Don't worry, I told him, bending down until my forehead was on the back of his neck.
Don't worry. We'll find some answers for you, too.
He sighed and wiggled until his muzzle was on my lap. I drove home that way. I made meatloaf, Samuel's recipe, which included plenty of jalapenos and several other peppers. Day old and out of the refrigerator, it could burn the skin off the roof of your mouth if you weren't careful. My phone rang, and I looked at the number. I set the timer on the oven, and it was still ringing.
Bran, I answered.
You're playing with fire, he said.
He sounded tired.
How did you know I'm making Samuel's meatloaf?
Mercedes.
You're supposed to give us some time, I told him. My stomach roiled. I needed more time to prove Sam's ability to keep the peace.
I love my son, Bran said, but I love you, too.
I heard everything that he didn't say. He'd chosen his son over me before. That was how he saw it. That was how I might have seen it at the time, too.
He's not going to hurt me, I said, looking into Sam's white eyes.
He stiffened, and I remembered to drop my gaze, though he hadn't been making me do that after last night. Usually, once the wolf knows you've acknowledged he's the boss, those kinds of things only crop up when the more dominant wolf is upset.
You don't know that.
I do, actually, I replied. I had a gunman break into the garage and point a gun at him, and he didn't attack, because I asked him not to, and because someone, a child, might have gotten hurt in the crossfire.
There was a very long pause.
I need you to be very clear on what is wrong, he said.
But I interrupted him.
No, you don't. If I tell you that Samuel's wolf is in charge, you will have to kill him.
He didn't say anything.
Maybe if he weren't your son, you could afford to be more lenient. Or if you hadn't used your position as Marok to force wolves who would rather have stayed hidden out into the open. But that lost you a lot of moral support that you haven't recovered yet. If you loosen those rules even a little, well, you probably won't lose your position. But there might be a lot of dead bodies on the ground. Maybe more than can be explained away to the humans. I've been doing a lot of thinking about this.
I let that hang in the air for a little while. We needed that week to justify Sam's reprieve to the other wolves.
Stay by the phone, he said, and hung up.
Sam looked at me and sighed, then flattened out on the floor on his side like a big fur rug. When the phone rang next, it was Charles, Samuel's brother, and Bran's enforcer.
Mercy.
Right here, I answered.
Tell me about Samuel.
Is it safe?
I won't know till you tell me, will I?
Was he trying to be funny? With Charles, I could never tell. Of all the Marok's wolves, his younger son was the most intimidating, at least to me.
I meant for Samuel, I said.
I'm under orders, he said with a cool smile in his voice, to keep the contents of our conversation to myself. All right. I cleared my throat and took Charles through my discovery that Samuel had tried to commit suicide all the way through Kelly Hart trying to apprehend Adam.
He played with the children? Charles asked.
Yes, I told you. Maya got on his back and rode him like a pony. It's a good thing for him she wasn't wearing spurs. Still flat on the floor, Sam thumped it with his tail twice. Otherwise, he might have been asleep. That's good, isn't it? I asked. It means he has some time.
Maybe, Charles answered. Mercy for werewolves. All of us have different relations with our wolves.
Charles didn't usually talk a lot, and when he did, his speech was deliberate, as if he thought through everything twice before saying anything out loud. Bran sounded that way on the phone, but Charles did it all the time, even in person.
Think of werewolves as conjoined twins. Some of us are quite separate, barely sharing anything at all with our wolves. Just two entities under the same skin. We all start out that way. When our human side is able to take control, wolf and man work out a... truce is the wrong word. Balance is better. And just as our human soul loses parts of what it was to be human, our wolf loses part of what it means to be a wolf.
So Samuel's wolf isn't dangerous?
No,
he said quickly. And Sam picked up his head, rolled up to his belly, and took a more sphinx-like stance.
Never think that. He's not whole anymore. He isn't equipped to be in charge. Like a conjoined twin, he shares his heart and head with Samuel. And if he succeeds in wresting complete control from Sam, or if Samuel lets him do it, that heart will quit beating.
I dropped to my knees and put a hand on Sam's shoulder, because the pain in Charles's voice found its echo in mine.
I doubt he'll survive for very long that way. Do you hear me, Wolf?
Sam's upper lip curled, showing teeth. He does, I said.
He'll grow tired and more hungry than usual. He'll slowly lose the chains that Samuel forged to control him, but all that will be left is a ravenous beast. A new wolf, a whole wolf in charge, kills easily and often, but usually there's a reason for it, even if that reason is that he doesn't like the way his victim smelled. What will be left of Samuel will kill and destroy until he drops dead.
How do you know? Charles was only a couple of centuries old. He had never lived in a place outside of the Morak's control, and the Morak killed wolves who lost control. But he sounded absolutely certain.
Let's say that, like you, I once had a friend I wished to help, and I kept him out of sight of my father in a place he could do no harm. It would have been kinder to kill him from the first.
My fingers sank into Sam's fur. How long do we have?
My friend was old, but not as old as Samuel. He lost his humanity over a few days, became sick and lethargic toward the end of that. I thought he was just fading, but he went into a frenzy.
He stopped speaking for a moment.
Then just dropped dead. Less than a week. I have no idea how long Samuel will last.
If he'd lost it when the wolf took over, I asked, like the new wolves do, he'd have been better off? I'd been so happy that he'd been different.
Then he'd have lived until our father caught up with him. But you would have died, along with the people in the hospital where you found him. This is better, Mercedes. But do not trust him too much.
Do you have any suggestions how I can help him?
The first is to convince the wolf to allow Samuel back in the driver's seat, if only for a short period of time.
He wants to survive, I told them both. That's why he took over from Samuel in the first place. If that means letting Samuel back in, he'll do it. I sounded much more convinced of that than I felt, but Sam sighed and gave me a tired, faint whine.
And then you have to convince Samuel that he wants to survive.
And if I can't? If the wolf lets Samuel out and he still wants to kill himself?
Then the wolf will have to fight for control again, or my brother dies.
Charles let out a breath of air.
All things die, Mercedes. Some just take longer than others.
Chapter 7. I took Sam with me to the bookstore that night, which was inconvenient. I suppose we both could have stayed home, but I wanted in to look at Finn's bookstore. The woman had been searching for something. Maybe I could figure out what it had been.
Maybe I'd find Finn there, happy and healthy. Maybe I wouldn't sit home all night worrying about things I couldn't change. I couldn't leave Sam by himself, not after my little talk with Charles, but he wasn't the best partner to bring with me to break into the store. People would overlook a woman wandering around the Uptown Mall in Richland even after most of the stores were closed. It wasn't that late, a little after 9 at night. The crime rate is relatively low in Richland, and most of what crime there is tends to be committed by gang members or teenagers. Sam, I imagined the hypothetical conversation as I drove down the interstate. Officer,
tell me, did you see anything unusual last night?
Random witness, there was this big white dog, huge and really white, stood out in the darkness like a beacon. Yep, Sam made matters more difficult. So I would just act like I knew what I was doing and hope no one ever called the police to investigate. I don't know what I hope to discover in the bookstore, I said. There is hardly going to be a note telling me where Finn is, right? Still, it's a start. If we don't find anything, maybe we'll go break into his apartment. It's better than sitting around at home, right? And the pack was meeting at Adam's house that night. I knew why he'd called the meeting. He wanted to find out who'd been playing games with me. He'd called me to tell me what he was doing, and asked me to stay away, because he hadn't had a chance to show me how to defend myself from pack members crawling around in my head. I should have gone over anyway, confronted my enemies, but it was different when all your enemies could do was kill you. I don't want to stay home knowing how much of a coward I am, I told Sam. I should have gone to Adam's when I saw them all arrive. He grunted. But the thought of them being able to make me do something I would never... I was pretty sure that it hadn't been lack of opportunity that kept Adam from teaching me how to protect myself. He'd said that if he'd known what was happening at the time when whoever it was started influencing me, he could have discovered their identity. I think he planned on trying to force a confession tonight. And if he couldn't, he would wait until they tried it again. If that was his motivation, I approved in spirit. But at the same time, I really didn't want to wait around until someone tried to make me do their bidding again. I parked in the corner of the uptown parking lot where an all-night restaurant was located. There weren't a lot of cars there, but enough that the rabbit didn't stand out. I opened Sam's door, and he sniffed the air carefully. "Are you scenting for the Fay woman who is here today?" I asked. He didn't give me any kind of answer, just shook himself and looked at me expectantly, as if he really were the dog we were pretending he was. Was he slower? Did his tail droop more than usual? Or was I letting Charles's words make me paranoid? I glanced at him, and was pretty sure it was both. Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean you aren't right. He wasn't quite as responsive either, as if it took him a moment to translate words into meanings. I didn't notice anyone who seemed to be watching us as we crossed the parking lot. But we were out where people could see us. All I could do was act as if I weren't breaking into the shop. It took me 2 full minutes to crack the lock on the door of the bookstore, which was about 1.5 minutes longer than I was comfortable standing there with my back to the parking lot and the busy street beyond. I was hopeful that someone from the street couldn't tell that I was playing with my lockpicks instead of fumbling with a stiff lock. There was a bar that was still open about 3 stores over, but no one had come or gone while I struggled. Sheer good luck, something I couldn't always count on. I was going to have to get some practice in if I kept having to break into buildings. The door handle turned, and I started to move onto the deadbolt when I realized that the door had popped open when I'd unlocked the handle. Someone hadn't engaged the deadbolt. I held the door for Sam, then slipped inside myself. He couldn't shut the door, and if there was something unfriendly in the store, he was better able to deal with it. I turned the deadbolt and looked around. My eyesight is good in the dark, so we didn't need to attract even more attention by turning on the light. It was darker in the store than it was outside, and the windows were already tinted, so it would be hard for anyone looking to see anything but the reflection of the outside lights. At first I observed a neat and tidy store that smelled of incense and old books. Paper holds the memory of any strong scent. So in a used bookstore it wasn't uncommon to get little trickles of food, tobacco, and perfume. I took a deep breath
to see if I could find anything that stood out.
Blood and fear and rage are a little out of the ordinary.
I stopped where I was and sucked in several deep breaths. Each time the smell grew stronger and stronger. Fae glamour, a type of illusion, is strongly effective on sight, sound, taste, and touch. I'm told it is sufficient for a human sense of smell, but mine is better than that. By the third breath, I smelled the sharp smell of broken wood and the ammonia-like scent that Fae magic sometimes leaves behind. I closed my eyes, bowed my head, and let my nose be right. My ears cleared with a pop. And when I looked up, the tidy bookcases filled with tidy books had disappeared, leaving destruction in their place.
Sam. I kept my voice down, though I don't think anyone outside would have heard me if I'd shouted. It was a reflex thing. We were sneaking around, so I needed to be quiet.
Do you smell it? The blood? There's a glamour here. Can you break it too? Do you see the mess the Fae left behind when they searched the place?
He cocked an ear at me, then looked around. With a movement swifter than thought, he turned and sank his teeth into my arm. Maybe if I thought there was a chance of him attacking me, I could have gotten out of the way or defended myself somehow. Instead, I stared at him dumbly as his fangs slid through skin and into flesh. He released me almost immediately, leaving behind two clean marks that could have been a vampire bite, except that they were too far apart and too big. Vampires have smaller fangs. Blood trickled out of one mark, then the other, dribbling down my forearm. Sam licked it clean, mostly, ignoring my surprised squeak and the way I backed away from him.
He looked around the shop again. I clamped my arm to my mouth. I didn't want to be bleeding anywhere in enemy territory. Witches can use blood and hair and other body parts to do nasty things. I didn't think the Fae worked quite the same way, but I didn't want to chance it. I checked under the counter for tissues and found something better, a first aid kit.
It wasn't as good as the one I had, but it was good enough to have gauze and an ace bandage.
Wrapped and no longer in danger of dripping bits of myself all over, I walked back to Sam. He was still where I'd left him, staring as hard as he could at something I could no longer see. It hadn't been a hard bite, and I wouldn't let myself be afraid of Sam. My foster father's SIG was in its holster across my shoulder, full of regular ammunition that generally worked just fine on Fae, and did nothing to werewolves but make them mad. I tuned out Charles's warning voice and put the hand of my uninjured arm on Sam's neck. I refused to believe he was regressing into a vicious killer. A bite did not a killer make.
"Damn it all, Sam, why'd you bite me?"
If I yelled at him, I couldn't be afraid of him. So I yelled at him. Sam glanced at me, then knocked one of the fallen books aside with one paw. It was a cloth-bound copy of Felix Salten's Bambi's Children. In the glamour version of the shop, there had been no books on the floor. He'd bitten me on purpose. Hadn't I asked him if he could break the glamour too? Evidently, the bite was his answer. My blood must have allowed him to see what I did, some sort of sympathetic magic or something.
"Cool," I said. "That's cool."
Pushing out of my head the knowledge that neither Samuel nor Sam, my friend, would have bitten me so casually, I turned my attention to the bookstore. I have a pretty good memory for scents, and I picked up Finn's without any trouble. If I'd been looking for purely human assailants, I'd have been in trouble. This was a bookstore, and it had a lot of people running through it. There weren't many Fae aside from Finn, who barely qualified to my nose. However, several of the Fae had been here recently, without many people in to cover up their trail. "I've got Finn, the old woman from this afternoon, and three other Fae," I told Sam. Sam raised himself on the edge of one of the dominoed bookcases and put his nose against the back, moving and sniffing until he'd found what he wanted. He stepped back an obvious invitation. Without touching it, I bent until my nose was nearly touching the wood. I smelled it too, right where someone had put their magic-laden hand on the wood and pushed the bookcase over. "That's one of them," I told Sam. "Some kind of woodland fae, I think. Air and growing things."
I followed Sam's lead and sniffed and crawled and sniffed some more until we had a handle of sorts on what had happened here. I'd have done it easier if I took coyote form. But if someone came upon us, I'd have a better chance of explaining myself and keeping things calm if I was human. Calm was good, because I didn't want Sam eating anyone he shouldn't. I told myself all these good reasons to keep my human shape on, because they were good reasons. But I knew the real reason was because that bite had made me concerned that Sam would forget that I was his friend if I were running around as a coyote instead of a human who could remind him of it. "So," I told him, my hands on my hips as I surveyed a patch of blood belonging to Finn. They came in the door, and the last one locked it behind him. "Let's call him Fishy Boy, because he's a water fay of some sort. He seems to be the one running the show, because all the damage to the store was done by the other two." Sam's icy gaze speared me, and I looked down and away, like the salute of a fencer, acknowledging his state as the big bad wolf without submitting to it. It must have been enough, because he didn't act any more aggressive. Again, with the dominant stuff, it wasn't something Sam usually indulged in unless he was really upset or meeting a wolf for the first time. When you're the top dog for long enough, I guess you don't feel like you have to rub people's noses in it. If he hadn't bitten me, I'd have just dropped my eyes, but that didn't feel safe anymore. Not after he bit me. I needed to remind him that I was an alpha's mate, predator, and not prey. "A week," Charles had said, based on one example who had been a lot younger than Samuel was. I was starting to worry that he'd been optimistic, which is something I've never felt compelled to accuse Charles of being. How much time did Sam have? "So, Fishy Boy grabs Finn and says, 'We know you's got it, see?'" I used my best Jimmy Cagney voice as I recited the scene as I had pieced it together. "And then he nods to his minions, Jolly Green Giants 1 and 2, because they both smell like green beans to me. Giant 1, she pushes over a bookcase that topples a few more." I couldn't always tell the sex of the person whose scent trail I was following, but Giant 1 was definitely female, though not necessarily big. 2, he's a little stronger. He gets some loft on his and tosses it about halfway across the room, taking down a couple of more bookcases along the way in a much more destructive fashion. The original bookcase, too, it tossed was in pieces, having broken apart when it hit. I could see the action running like a film through my head. The steps had been laid out before my nose and eyes, with a little imagination thrown in. I wasn't sure even a werewolf could have picked up a bookcase stuffed full of books. "But Finn doesn't tell right away," I told Sam. I thought about Tad, my morning visitor with gun, and the dry blood on the floor. "So, Fishy Boy continues working on Finn while the giant twins go looking for it in the store. They're pretty convinced it is here because they took apart everything. I'm thinking that the ripped-up books might just be frustration, because it wasn't done in a methodical way. I suppose, even so, it could be that they are looking for something that is not a book." I looked around. "Maybe it could be hidden in a book or behind a book." They stopped because Finn started talking. Sam sneezed a quick agreement. Or maybe it was just dust. I was worried it was just dust. "Did he know they were coming and call Tad to warn me?" I asked. "Or did they make him call Tad, and he managed to leave a vague warning instead? Either way, isn't it interesting that he didn't say what it was I'd borrowed?" I tapped my fingers on a bookcase that was still upright. "So maybe they don't know it was a book, and he was afraid they could hear him, or they could read Tad's message." Sam sneezed again. I glanced at him and saw the intelligent gleam that told me he was listening, and made me realize that he hadn't been just a few minutes ago. "Maybe they really are after something entirely different. It could even be that Finn got clever and sent them after me to throw them off the trail. He does know that I have more protection than most people." I let go of the bookcase so I could start pacing. "And this is where I'm going to be adding 1 and 1 and getting 50, but bear with me." I walked twice around the shop and came to a halt where I'd started in the first place. "Assume that at some point yesterday, Finn breaks down and tells them exactly who I am. Things like who I'm dating and how many people would be angry if they just came after me.
This next part is the weakest part of my story, Sam, but my instincts are screaming at me that the incident with Kelly Hart this morning and what happened to Finn are connected. It's that Faye waiting up on the roof that makes me certain of it. I just don't know exactly why they wanted me dead. Sam growled. Think about it, I told him, as if I were sure that he was growling at the threat to me. This isn't the work